Tip FM's Tip Today with Fran Curry.
In association with Slattery's of Pecan, Tipperary's main Peugeot dealer. Slattery's Garage Pecan, the name you can trust for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.
Time for another episode in Tipperary's Hidden Histories in the company of Dr. Conor Reedy.
This month, we do have murder, and we've heard many tales of murder on this slot, Fran, but oftentimes they've been of a very conventional nature, I suppose, for the 19th century, especially things like agrarian, land-related or faction fight-related stuff, you know.
Mm.
Now, today we explore a killing of a far more sinister and cold-blooded nature, if that's even possible. This is the story of a complex family that didn't project any outward appearance, actually, of problems to the outside world. Yet, somewhere in the darkness that was this long-distance relationship, an evil and sinister plot was brewing, and the consequences for both parties in this marriage were deadly.
All right, so where will we put the spotlight on, then?
We are putting the spotlight today not on Cashel for once, but on Clohean.
Ah, lovely.
And we are meeting the Burke family, mm-hmm. and we have Richard and Johanna Burke, and they were married quite likely, I believe, in Clohean in 1847. So just for historical context for people, Black 47, the height of the famine in Ireland, and they were married. Now, the couple never had children. And this was unsurprising, given that from about 1850, Richard, the husband, lived away in Waterford. And he worked there in the city workhouse in Waterford as a clerk. Now, not much can be said about their lives aside from the fact that they lived apart for much of the remainder of their lives. Now, on the main street in Clohean, Johanna lived a quiet life next door to her sister Alice Mooney and Alice's daughter Hannah. Hannah, the niece, spent a lot of time living with Johanna in her house, keeping her company and often staying overnight. So I bring up Alice and Hannah because they come into the story later.
Mm.
Now, as I say, the Burkes lived a somewhat unusual life together in that just 3 years after they were married, he moved to take up this job in Waterford Workhouse. And they never lived together full time again. Johanna visited Richard from time to time in Waterford, frequently to begin with, but eventually her visits tapered off. And in the past 2 years of her life, she went just once or twice, if even that much.
Mm.
And Richard would send money on to his wife on a regular basis then in the early years. But that decreased too over time. And during the closing years of her life, she had to ask him for money, kind of to remind him to send it on.
Mm.
She did have a few acres of land to support her. But besides this, she was totally dependent on what he sent. Now, I just want to draw listeners, Fran, to a name that we'll come back to then later, but just briefly to introduce a young woman named Ellen Pine, or
yes.
Nellie Pine. And Nellie came to work in the second half of 1861 as a maid for Johanna Burke. And it may have been that Johanna was under some pressure as she was experiencing some degree of ongoing health problems. She suffered for many years from epilepsy. So just to keep Nellie Pine in mind for the moment.
Mm.
So they marry in 1847, Richard moves to Waterford in 1850, and then we jump ahead to the early months of 1862. And Richard was engaged in a number of conversations with staff, with various individuals where he worked at Waterford Workhouse, and these conversations would later raise curiosity.
Mm.
So early 1862. In February of that year, he had a discussion with Dr. Fitzpatrick from Kilkenny, who did some work in Waterford Workhouse. And he had a discussion with Dr. Fitzpatrick about the availability of poisons.
Mm.
Now, while together, alone in the boardroom of the workhouse in Waterford, Richard Burke quizzed the doctor about the availability of products such as arsenic and strychnine.
Oh.
So listeners will have heard of both, at least, hopefully never ingested, but they'll have heard of them.
Mm.
And Waterford Workhouse did have an apothecary on site, a kind of a pharmacy on site.
Mm.
Dr. Elliot was the medical officer of the workhouse. He was assisted by Dr. Burkett, and together they served as surgeon, physician and compounder of medicines. They both handled the whole thing together. And the medicines were held in an apothecary's shop.
It's like a pharmacy, I guess.
It's like a pharmacy, yeah. Exactly. Mm. And the key was held then by Richard Rafter, who was a male nurse, or by Mrs. Tobin, who was the head female nurse. And the medicines were held in a glass cabinet and contained several medicines in small bottles. Some of these were poisonous, obviously, but, you know, not designed to poison anybody, but more to fit into the medical needs of the patients or the residents of the workhouse.
Mm.
Now, Dr. Elliott wasn't the only one to witness the curiosity of Richard Burke's presence around the medicines at Waterford Workhouse. I mean, this is something he shouldn't. He was a clerk, so he shouldn't have really been involved in that side of the house. Margaret Bowen was an inmate of 3 years, and she worked as a sort of medical assistant in the wet nursery. And she'd bring messages between one department and another. And she knew Nurse Rafter very well. And in the weeks leading up to Easter 1862 then, on one particular day, the matron of the workhouse sent Margaret Bowen to Nurse Rafter with some starch, just on a message. She found him in the surgery with Richard Burke. And both men were huddled over a counter on top of a piece of white paper. And there was a spoonful of white powder on this white paper. So Rafter was holding a small glass bottle, and the men were, according to Margaret Bowen, they were laughing heartily.
Huh,
now,
strange.
Again, Burke had no business involved in any of this stuff. That's important to remember.
Hmm.
The storage of these substances, however, was somewhat haphazard at Waterford Workhouse. In February 1862, the press was open on one particular day, but it wasn't locked because the keys were lost. And Dr. Elliott witnessed Richard Burke entering the apothecary's shop very briefly on at least one occasion. He didn't pay too much heed, but he did remember that some small bottles were exposed, such as Epsom salts or magnesia and strychnine. Now, many of the bottles had powder caked onto the outside, and so the labels were covered, and only a trained eye might know at a glance what was contained inside. So, basically, you know, when we say it was an apothecary's shop and it was some sort of a pharmacy, I suspect it was very messy, not very
organized
or,
yes.
And, you know, not very well kept, really, because it was a workhouse, after all. Now, at the end of Lent in 1862, Richard Burke paid a visit back home to his wife in Clohean. He hadn't been home in a year, Fran. Now, Clohean and Waterford aren't a million miles apart. Hannah Mooney, Johanna's niece we mentioned earlier, she witnessed a conversation between her aunt Johanna and her uncle-in-law. On the Sunday morning, Richard told his wife, "Oh, Johanna, I thought you would have died of your heart beating last night." Dr. Harrington has a sister who had the same complaint, and she got a recipe from London which cured her, and I'll send you some of the same. Now, he only arrived home on the Saturday night, and he was gone by the Monday morning, Fran. So this is his first visit home in a year or two, and he stays two nights. So this is all very odd to start with. So that was towards the end of Lent. Sometime later, a parcel arrived at Johanna's house from Waterford, and the parcel contained some sort of possibly powdered medicine, accompanied by written instructions. So bear in mind, during his visit at the end of Lent, Johanna discussed with Richard the problems with her health, and he offered to source some medicine from inside Waterford Workhouse, and the parcel remained unopened until the 14th of April, when Johanna felt unwell. So on that fateful evening, it was a Monday, the 14th of April, Johanna complained to the maid, Nellie Pine, that she wasn't feeling her best. Now, just an hour earlier, she'd had tea with her sister, Alice, from next door, and complained that she had something called a hurry on her chest. Beautiful way to put it.
Sounds like palpitations or something.
Feeling a hurry on my chest.
Hurry, yeah.
She said that she would take some of this medicine that her husband had sent on from Waterford, and Nellie was sent out to go to the river to fetch a can of water. When Nellie returned with the water, Johanna went into the parlour of her house, opened up the parcel and mixed some of the powdered medicine sent by her husband Richard from the stocks at Waterford Workhouse.
Mm.
Now, shortly after taking the mixture, Johanna became violently unwell and called out, "Nelly, Nelly, there's a bad taste off that medicine." She called out again three times and was quickly in extreme pain. "Oh, Nelly, I'm dead," she proclaimed in panic. And Nelly helped Johanna to a chair to prevent her falling, but the older woman asked to be placed on the floor as she was falling into seizure mode and her limbs were distorted by spasms. So in the midst of all this panic, Nelly ran next door to fetch Alice, Johanna's sister, or the niece, whichever was available. Now, this was already a difficult period for those two because Alice's own husband had just died exactly 1 week earlier of natural causes. Mm. So Alice was going through her own traumas, as was her daughter. So Nelly made a cup of tea for Johanna, but Johanna was unable to hold the cup. And by this time, the frightened woman was roaring and bawling and struggling to vomit. "Bad manners to that blackguard medicine," she proclaimed. "I'm dead. I'm killed." So Nelly was sent out to get a doctor, and she ran across the street to a man called Jemmy the doctor. He wasn't actually a doctor, but he was some kind of a chemist or maybe a quack. But anyway, he's the one people went to. Meanwhile, Alice put two pillows under her sister's head, and her limbs were plunging and kicking violently, and her body was bending, and she kept repeating that she was dying. And Alice did her best to calm Johanna, assuring her that it was an attack, probably epileptic. But Johanna insisted that she knew her epilepsy and this was something different. "Oh, Anne, my own sister," that's what she called her, "I would rather die in your arms than anyone else's." So the sister assured her that she was not dying. Unfortunately, Johanna had one last very violent attack before falling calm and passing away. So in all of this, from the moment Alice came into the house until Johanna died, Alice had exactly half an hour with her sister.
My God.
So it was a very short but violent end.
So now, I guess the spotlight goes on Richard then, or does it?
Well, it does. Richard arrived back, and it's interesting, the suspicion fell on him straight away, Fran.
Mm.
This was a Monday evening when Johanna met her violent death, and he arrived back in Cloheen by the following evening, the Tuesday evening.
Mm.
And Alice Mooney must have been, you know, a very sharp individual, but she was suspicious of Richard Burke from the beginning.
Mm.
And in fact, they shared very little conversation when he returned. Alice appears to have been aware of the dispatch of medicine to her late sister from this Dr. Harrington at the workhouse via Richard. She quizzed Richard on what sort of a person Dr. Harrington was. Was he respectable? Where was he from? Was he native to Waterford? And Richard replied that Dr. Harrington was a native of Cork. He was a respectable man, and he was the brother of a respectable man, for what that was worth, I don't know. She asked Burke what was in the package, and he replied magnesia. And she pointed out that magnesia wouldn't have harmed, as she put it, a newborn baby, let alone cause the devastating and fatal reaction in her sister. He agreed and conceded maybe that Dr. Harrington had put something else in the package. And Faith said, Alice Mooney, maybe he did. So by the following day then, on which Johanna was buried, Alice was fully convinced that Richard Burke had murdered his wife, her sister. And she confronted him full on with this accusation after the burial. So Johanna Burke was not buried without a post-mortem, Fran. The local doctor, Richard Walsh, removed her stomach and part of her intestines and tied the extremities to keep them intact and put the whole lot into a jar and sent the contents away for analysis.
Oh.
And apart from some fat around the heart, which may have made her unhealthy, it didn't contribute to her death, in this doctor's opinion. Now, a professor of chemistry from Queen's College Cork confirmed that he had tested the parcel from which Johanna had mixed the medicine that seemed to take her life. And in that package, Fran, he detected Epsom salts, carbonate of magnesia, and strychnine.
Ah, okay.
So, game over.
Hmm.
So, based on a combination of this chemical evidence and the eyewitness testimony from Nellie Pine and Alice Mooney on the final moments of Johanna Burke, there was no question that she had been poisoned. and she was murdered by her husband, the very one who claimed that he was trying to help her and trying to make her better.
Mm.
So, as often happens on our during our conversations, Fran, this ends up at the assizes. This ends up in court. The killing happened in April of 1862. So at the assizes in July of 1862, Richard Burke was put on trial for murdering his wife. And a trail of eyewitnesses, medical experts, and Waterford workhouse officials and various people all constructed a picture that clearly put Richard Burke in the frame for killing Johanna. He was found guilty by a jury who, for some reason, recommended mercy. And following a lengthy sentencing address by the judge, which we don't have time to go into today, the judge recommended, rejected the mercy recommendation and sentenced Richard Burke to be executed in Clonmel on the 25th of August, 1862.
Oh.
So it was, of course, the ultimate punishment. Richard was indeed brought to the execution site in Clonmel in August 1862 to face his punishment for administering poison to what one publication described as, and I quote, an unoffending, loving wife consigned to a dreadful and sudden death for no fault of her own, unquote. So, in the time between sentencing and execution day, it was believed that he, and this is extraordinary, that he conversed freely and even gaily, as one newspaper put it, with those to whom he came into contact. So this was the time between sentencing and execution, Fran, when, you know, these people are meant to be solemn, they're meant to be, you know, half living in terror, attended a lot by the clergy. He was attended by the Sisters of Charity, who tried to reconcile him with his crimes before he was executed. And in a very macabre turn of events, he even expressed a wish to dig his own grave.
What?
But that never came to pass, thankfully. This was one cool customer, Fran.
Wasn't he just,
So throughout the period, he demonstrated what they called a rare courage. The rest of us might call it an arrogance. And he carried this all the way to the hangman's noose, which went around his neck and, as they say, ended his earthly journey on the 25th of August, 1862.
Now, it's the latest in our Tipperary Hidden Histories in the company there of Dr. Conor Reedy. And if you're fond of Conor, I would recommend you go on and have a look at what he tweets almost every day. In fact, some great stuff there. A lot of it opinionated. You might disagree with some of it, but it's always intriguing anyway, that's for sure. We'll be speaking to our gardener in just a little while, Alton Nesbitt. So again, keep your queries coming into us, please, on 083-311-3311.
Join the conversation in Tipperary. Contact us through Facebook, Twitter, or email tiptoday@tipfm.com.